Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Save $100 on the Craftsman V20 6-Tool Power Tool Combo Kit, now at $199. No matter what the project is, Craftsman's high-quality, high-performance products empower you to build on. Stop by your nearest Lowe's store and check out the full line of Craftsman tools today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Hi, I'm Terry Schmidt, a registered dietitian and host of On Nutrition, a podcast from Mayo Clinic where we dig into the latest nutrition trends and research to help you understand what's health and what's hype. There's a lot of wild stuff out there, so we'll be keeping it science-based, research-informed, and practical. Mayo Clinic's On Nutrition, new episodes every other week, wherever you get your podcasts.
The last day of school is always a bittersweet moment, filled with excitement for the summer and sadness at leaving friends behind, even if only for a few months. For my friends and me, it was also a day for adventure. That particular year, we decided to explore the old, abandoned school at the edge of town. It was a place we had always been curious about, but never brave enough to visit. The school had been closed for years, left to decay and be reclaimed by nature. Stories about it were passed down from one generation of students to the next, tales of ghost sightings and unexplained noises. We always dismissed them as mere stories, but on the last day of eighth grade, we decided to see for ourselves. It was late afternoon when we gathered our courage and set off. The sun was beginning to set, casting long shadows across the deserted building. The school loomed before us, its windows shattered and doors hanging askew. We pushed open the rusted gate, the creak echoing in the stillness. "Are we really doing this?" my friend Jake asked, his voice tinged with nervous excitement. "Yeah, we are," I replied, trying to sound confident. "It's now or never." We stepped inside, the air immediately cooler and filled with the smell of mold and decay. The halls were lined with lockers, their doors ajar, revealing forgotten textbooks and broken pencils. We moved cautiously, our flashlights cutting through the gloom. The building seemed to close in around us, each creak and groan of the old structure making us jump. Despite the fear, there was a thrill to it, a sense of adventure. We wandered the hallways, peering into classrooms filled with broken desks and dusty chalkboards. It was eerie, but nothing overtly scary, at least, not yet. As we ventured deeper into the school, we found a staircase leading to the basement. The stairs were narrow and steep, disappearing into darkness. A sense of unease settled over us, but our curiosity pushed us forward. We descended slowly, the sound of our footsteps echoing off the walls. The basement was even more unsettling. The air was thick and musty, and our flashlights revealed strange symbols drawn on the walls. Old furniture was piled haphazardly, creating an obstacle course of sorts. We had to navigate carefully to avoid tripping. In the far corner of the basement, we found a door that was slightly ajar. It led to a small room filled with old, yellowed papers and broken chairs. At the center of the room was a circle of candles, long since extinguished but still standing. The sight of it sent chills down my spine. "What is this?" asked my friend Lily. "I don't know," I replied, my voice barely above a whisper. but I don't like it. As we examined the room, we heard a noise, a soft, almost imperceptible whisper. We froze, straining to listen. The whisper grew louder, more distinct, and it seemed to be coming from all around us. Panic took over us, and we decided it was time to leave. We hurried back up the stairs, but the building seemed to have other plans. As we made our way through the halls, we saw something that stopped us in our tracks, a dark figure standing at the end of the corridor. It was tall and gaunt, its features obscured by the darkness. "Do you see that?" Jake whispered. We all nodded, too terrified to speak. The figure didn't move, just stood there, watching us. We backed away slowly, our eyes never leaving the shadowy form. As we turned a corner, we broke into a run, desperate to escape the oppressive atmosphere of the building. The halls seemed to stretch on forever, and we kept hearing whispers and footsteps behind us. My heart was pounding, my breath coming in short gasps. It felt like the hallway was miles long. Finally, we burst through the front doors and into the cool evening air. We didn't stop running until we were far from the school, collapsing on the grass, gasping for breath. The relief of being outside, away from that place, was overwhelming. "What was that?" Lily asked, her voice shaking. "I don't know," I replied, my mind racing with fear and confusion. "But I'm never going back there." We made a pact to keep our adventure a secret, not wanting to relive the terror of that night. The abandoned school was eventually demolished, replaced by a new building. But the memory of that last day, the fear we felt, stayed with us. Until this day, I still try to make sense of what we experienced. The whispers, the symbols, the dark figure, it all seems like a bad dream. But we know it was real. We were there, and we felt the fear. The last day of school is supposed to be a time of joy and celebration, a day filled with laughter and plans for summer adventures. For me and my friends, it started that way. We were in eighth grade, eagerly anticipating our transition to high school. The air was filled with excitement as we cleared out our lockers and said our goodbyes. But that day, everything changed in the blink of an eye. After school, a group of us decided to walk home together, as we often did. It was a sunny afternoon, the kind where the warmth of the sun on your skin makes you feel invincible.
Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-Pack Battery Kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
We laughed and joked, talking about our plans for the summer. I remember feeling carefree and happy, unaware of the dark turn the day was about to take. We took our usual route, a shortcut through a quiet suburban neighborhood. The streets were lined with trees, their leaves casting dappled shadows on the pavement. It was a peaceful area, the kind where nothing bad ever seemed to happen. We were halfway home when a white van pulled up beside us. The van's windows were tinted, and it slowed down as it approached. At first, we didn't think much of it. We continued walking, but the van kept pace with us. The driver rolled down the window and called out, asking for directions to a nearby street. He seemed friendly enough, a middle-aged man with a kind smile. Always eager to help, I stepped closer to give him directions. That's when everything went wrong. Before I knew it, the man had grabbed my arm and yanked me into the van. It happened so fast that I barely had time to react. I screamed, and my friends tried to pull me back, but he was too strong. In a matter of seconds, the van door slammed shut, and it sped off, leaving them in shock and disbelief. Panic set in as I realized I was trapped. The inside of the van was dark and smelled of dampness and oil. My heart was pounding, my mind racing with fear. I tried to stay calm, to think of a way to escape, but the man's grip on me was firm. He didn't say much, just drove in silence, the hum of the engine and the sound of rain hitting the roof the only noises. I tried to take in my surroundings, to remember any details that might help me later, but the fear made it hard to focus. After what felt like an eternity, the van stopped. The man dragged me out and into an old, abandoned building. The place was run down, with broken windows and graffiti-covered walls. He pushed me into a small room and locked the door, leaving me alone in the dark. I felt a wave of despair wash over me. I was scared and alone, unsure of what would happen next. I thought about my friends, about how they must be feeling, and a tear rolled down my cheek. I didn't want to die. I kept telling myself that I had to stay strong, that I had to find a way out. Hours passed, each one feeling like a lifetime. The man came back periodically, bringing me food and water, but he never spoke. His eyes were cold, devoid of any emotion. I tried to plead with him, to ask why he was doing this, but he ignored me. The nights were the worst. The darkness was suffocating, and the silence was deafening. I could hear every creak, every rustle, and my imagination ran wild. I kept thinking about my family, wondering if they were looking for me, hoping they hadn't given up. One night, I heard sirens in the distance. My heart leaped with hope. I banged on the door, shouting for help. The man rushed in, his face twisted with anger. He grabbed me, dragging me to another room, but I fought back with every ounce of strength I had. Suddenly, the door burst open, and police officers stormed in. They tackled the man, pulling him away from me. I collapsed to the floor, sobbing with relief. They had found me. I was safe. The next few days were a blur of police interviews, hospital visits, and reunions with my family and friends. The relief of being found was overshadowed by the trauma of what had happened. I had nightmares for weeks, waking up in a cold sweat, the fear still fresh in my mind. It took time, but I started to heal. My friends and family were incredibly supportive, helping me through the darkest moments. The man who kidnapped me was convicted and sent to prison, but the fear never truly left me. The memory of that van, that man, haunted my dreams and changed me forever. It started with little things. I'd see the same person watching me from a distance, but I brushed it off as paranoia. It wasn't until the last day of school that things took a darker turn, transforming what should have been a day of celebration into a nightmare I would never forget. My friends and I were ready for summer, discussing our plans as we walked home together. The streets were busy with students, parents, and teachers, everyone smiling and chatting. It was a perfect day, or so it seemed. I first noticed him standing by the school gate, a man in his late 30s, wearing a dark hoodie and jeans. He didn't look out of place at first, just another parent waiting to pick up their child. but as we walked past, I felt his eyes follow me. It was a feeling I couldn't shake, a cold sensation that crept up my spine. I tried to ignore it, focusing on my friends and our conversation. We planned to spend the afternoon at the local park, enjoying the sunshine and our newfound freedom. We arrived at the park, found a spot under a large oak tree, and settled in. We played games, laughed, and enjoyed ourselves, the memory of the man by the gate fading from my mind. As the afternoon wore on, I went to buy ice cream from a nearby stand. That's when I saw him again. He was standing near the entrance of the park, partially hidden by a tree, his eyes fixed on me. My heart skipped a beat. I told myself it was just a coincidence that he happened to be there, but the unease was growing. I hurried back to my friends, trying to act normal. We ate our ice cream, but I couldn't shake the feeling of being watched. I glanced around the park, my eyes scanning the crowd, but he was gone. I tried to convince myself that I was being silly, that it was all in my head. As the sun began to set, we decided to head home. The park was emptying out, the sounds of laughter and play fading into the evening. We said our goodbyes and started walking home. The streets were quieter now, the bustle of the day replaced by the stillness of evening. I walked with my friend Emily, chatting about our summer plans. We were halfway home when I saw him again, standing on the opposite side of the street. He was leaning against a lamppost, watching us. My heart pounded in my chest, fear gripping me. "Emily, do you see that guy over there?" I asked, trying to keep my voice steady. She looked over and frowned. "Yeah, what about him?" "He's been following me all day," I whispered, my voice trembling. "I saw him at school, then at the park, and now here." Emily's eyes widened. "That's creepy. Maybe we should go to your place and tell your parents." I nodded, relieved that she believed me. We quickened our pace, trying to put some distance between us and the man. I glanced back and saw him start to follow us, his steps measured and deliberate. By the time we reached my house, my hands were shaking. We rushed inside, locking the door behind us. I told my parents everything, and they called the police. The officers arrived quickly, but by the time they searched the neighborhood, the man was gone. They took my statement and assured me they would patrol the area, but their words did little to ease my fear. That night, I couldn't sleep. Every noise, every creak of the house sent me into a panic. I kept seeing his face in my mind, those cold, unblinking eyes. The fear was suffocating. I felt like a prisoner in my own home. The next few days, the police increased their patrols, but there was no sign of the man. My friends were supportive, checking in on me and offering to walk me places, but the fear never left. I felt like I was always being watched, a constant shadow over my shoulder. One evening, I decided to go for a walk to clear my head. It was a warm, summer night, and the streets were quiet. I stayed close to home, my senses on high alert. As I turned a corner, I saw him again. He was standing under a streetlight, his face partially obscured by the hood of his sweatshirt. My heart stopped. I turned and ran. I could hear his footsteps behind me, quickening to match my pace. I darted into a nearby alley, hoping to lose him. The alley was dark and narrow, and I felt a surge of panic as I realized I was trapped. I could hear his footsteps growing closer. I hid behind a dumpster, my heart pounding in my chest. I held my breath, trying to make myself as small as possible. The footsteps stopped, and I heard him breathing, slow and steady. "You can't hide forever," he said, his voice low and menacing. I felt a surge of fear. I had to do something, had to get out of there. I spotted a broken bottle on the ground and grabbed it, holding it tightly. My hands were shaking, but I knew I had to defend myself. The footsteps started again, moving away from the alley. I waited. When I was sure he was gone, I slipped out from behind the dumpster and ran home as fast as I could. When I got home, I told my parents what had happened. They called the police again, and this time, the officers took my fear seriously. They searched the area and found no sign of the man, but they promised to keep a close watch. The days that followed were tense. I felt like I was living in a nightmare, constantly looking over my shoulder, always on edge. My parents installed security cameras around the house, and I carried pepper spray with me wherever I went. One evening, as we were having dinner, the doorbell rang. My dad answered it, and I heard him talking to someone. I felt a surge of fear, wondering if it was the man. My dad called me to the door, and my heart sank when I saw who it was. It was the man. He was standing there, a smirk on his face. "Hello, I'm your new neighbor," he said, his voice dripping with false friendliness. "I just moved in next door and thought I'd introduce myself." I felt a wave of nausea. This was no coincidence. He had moved in next door to keep an eye on me, to torment me. I stepped back, my mind racing. My dad, unaware of the man's true intentions, shook his hand and welcomed him to the neighborhood. The man's eyes met mine, and I saw the coldness in them. He knew what he was doing, and he was enjoying it. I felt a surge of anger and fear. I knew I couldn't live like this. That night, I made a decision. I called the police and told them everything. They launched an investigation and discovered that the man had a history of stalking and harassment. He was arrested and charged, and a restraining order was issued. The fear didn't disappear overnight, but knowing he was behind bars gave me some relief. I started to feel safe again, slowly rebuilding my sense of security. My friends and family were there for me, helping me through the recovery. On our last day of school, my friends and I decided to celebrate by spending the evening at our friend Jake's house, playing games and enjoying our last moments together before summer began. Jake's house was an old, two-story home on the outskirts of town. It had a large backyard that bordered a dense forest. We had spent countless evenings there, playing hide-and-seek and telling ghost stories around a bonfire. This night was no different, or so we thought. The evening started off fun. We played video games, roasted marshmallows, and laughed until our sides hurt. As the night wore on, Jake suggested we play hide-and-seek one last time before it got too dark. The idea of playing in the dim light of dusk added a thrill to the game. We set the boundaries, the house and the first few rows of trees in the forest. I was it, so I counted to 50 while the others scattered to find their hiding spots. The air was cool, and the sounds of the forest were loud as the sun dipped below the horizon. I finished counting and started my search. The house was eerily quiet as I moved from room to room, calling out for my friends. I found Emma hiding behind the couch and Jack in the pantry. We laughed and continued searching for Jake, who was always the best at hiding. After searching the house thoroughly, we moved to the backyard. The first few rows of trees cast long shadows in the fading light. We called out for Jake, but there was no answer. We assumed he was hiding deeper in the forest, so we ventured in. As we moved deeper into the woods, the usual sounds of the forest, crickets, rustling leaves, and distant owl hoots, were absent. The silence was unsettling. We called for Jake again, but the only response was our voices echoing back at us. Maybe he went back to the house, Emma suggested. Let's keep looking a bit longer, I said, trying to sound braver than I felt. We continued our search, but the further we went, the more uneasy we became. That's when we saw it, a dark shadow moving between the trees. At first, we thought it was Jake, trying to scare us. But as we moved closer, we realized the figure was too tall and too dark to be him. Jake, is that you? Jack called out. The figure didn't respond. Instead, it seemed to glide between the trees, its movements unnatural and unsettling. We felt a chill in the air, colder than the night should have been. A sense of dread washed over us, and we instinctively backed away. We turned and started walking quickly back toward the house. The shadow followed us, always just at the edge of our vision. It seemed to grow larger, more menacing, as we neared the edge of the forest. We broke into a run. As we burst out of the trees and into the backyard, the shadow disappeared. We didn't stop until we were inside the house, locking the doors behind us. "Where's Jake?" Emma asked. We searched the house again, calling his name, but there was no sign of him. Fear gripped us as we realized he was still out there, alone in the dark. We decided to call his parents and the police, hoping they could help us find him. Minutes felt like hours as we waited for help to arrive. We huddled together in the living room, jumping at every noise. The police arrived and began their search, combing through the forest with flashlights and dogs. We watched from the window, our hearts heavy with fear and guilt. After what felt like an eternity, they found Jake. He was sitting at the base of a large tree, unharmed but shaken. He couldn't remember how he got there or why he hadn't responded to our calls. The only thing he could recall was a feeling of overwhelming dread and the sensation of being watched. The police couldn't find any evidence of the shadowy figure we had seen. They assured us it was probably just our imaginations playing tricks on us, but we knew what we saw. The memory of that dark shadow haunted us for weeks, casting a pall over our summer. Jake seemed different after that night, quieter and more withdrawn.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.